98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Tuesday. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Fresh off of 3 hours of Game of Thrones last night.
Yeah.
I did it last night, right around 7 o'clock. I told her, I said, Chelsea, let's go. I got the last two episodes from last season still on the DVR. Let's hit it. So we watched the two final episodes from last season. Got all caught up so I could remember what happened.
Yeah.
The great incident with Littlefinger and Arya and Sansa. And then the big meeting with all the leaders.
Don't give anything
this
away.
This from last season.
Okay, don't give anything away. There might be some people out there who still haven't seen it yet.
And the three dragons.
Don't give anything away.
Oh, man, the dragons.
The dragons.
Yeah.
The fight with the White Walkers, where Khaleesi came and tried to save Jon Snow.
As someone who watches the show, it does sound ridiculous to hear someone just lay out what is going on. If you don't know the kind of context, it sounds ridiculous.
It's the greatest TV show of all time. Like, it's the best. So then we watched for 2 hours. And she's like, why are we watching? Because I don't remember what happened. So then I watched it and I remembered. And then I watched the first new episode. And then somebody said there's only like 5 more episodes. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, I think there's only 6 this season.
What the hell?
Yeah, there's only 6. But wasn't it?
What is HBO going to do when the show's over?
They're going to make other good shows.
They're making prequels.
Yeah.
They're keeping the franchise going, but they're going to create new stories. Okay. Things that happened before this story happened.
See, is that what they're going to do?
Dragons?
I think Naomi Watts has already signed on to be in one of the shows.
Wow. It can't be as good, though. What? Like, it just can't be. All right, so that was my night last night. 3 hours Game of Thrones on the couch.
Trying to remember what I even
now
did.
Now I just
last
want
night.
To know what happened.
I think I was in bed by 9 o'clock.
And somebody's like, Littlefinger's still alive. People are tweeting me. I'm like, well, he can't be alive. What day is he? Can't be alive. He's dead.
He's dead.
I watched Arya just kill him.
Well, good. Now the Gambo's all caught up. Again, spoiler free out of courtesy to our audience.
I didn't mention anything from the first episode.
Speaking of spoiler free, we didn't get any spoilers today during that Cardinals press conference, now, did we?
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Before I get started today, guys, I want to say a few things. Number one, we are not done with this process. We have not made a decision on the first overall pick. All right?
Okay, goodbye.
Secondly, there are a number of players, in my opinion,
don't interrupt
our scouts' opinion and our coaching staff's opinion, that warrant being the first overall selection. Have we received calls about trading for the first pick or any of our players? Those are the sort of things that I'm going to keep private and in-house.
So, everybody, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We appreciate your time today.
We have not made a decision on. I would have just walked out, got out, get up and just, all right, thanks.
Do you feel like you were getting scolded by Steve Kerr?
A little. You know what? I described it. I described it in the prep
take
room.
Take care. Is there free lunch anywhere? Because I got to go.
He wasn't sharp like a blade that cuts you. He was sharp like a blade, like when you're shaving,
cuts,
you know,
like a knife.
Kind of scraping up against your skin a little bit. He wasn't like slicing and dicing. He wasn't going all samurai sword on everybody, but there was a
cuts
distinct,
like a knife, but it feels so right.
There was a distinct little edge in his voice, just a little bit, not enough.
I am going to lay the groundwork now so you don't ask me about this.
Sure.
I am going to lay the law down.
But okay.
That's what he was doing.
And in his defense, what did anybody of sound mind or body actually expect him to do today? As today was the pre-draft press conference with Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim.
Somebody asked them, and I don't know why they would ask this, and like, how come you won't disclose like the teams you're talking to? I mean, I thought that was, I mean, honestly, really? Like, you think he's going to tell you? Yeah, I'm talking to this team, and this team. I'm like, they're not gonna tell you the teams they're talking to.
No, so
somebody asked that question. I was like, yeah, you're not getting an answer.
But he did. I mean, because he started that out, you know. And look, this is a position Steve Keim's never been in. This is a position the organization hasn't been in 5+ decades or more. I can't even remember the last time they had the number one pick. I think it was back in the '50s. So he's going to handle, you know, that press conference today. He's going to handle it with a little bit of a look. This is how this is going to go. Laying some ground rules down right now. I'm not going to deal in hypotheticals. I'm not going to tell you that we've decided what we're going to do. We have not made a decision. He was asked when he expects to make a decision.
Once we finish with the 120 process, Cliff and I will sit down with Michael Bidwell, and we'll discuss all of our options, and we'll weigh through what makes us better as an organization.
Is there a reason you haven't decided the number one pick yet?
Because we have time.
We have a week and 2 days.
Time is on our side.
I'm not in any rush at all.
Yeah, here's the reality. I mean, I truly believe that they know what direction they're going to go in, but you'll take all the allotted time you have to make sure that you're making the right decision. You've got this extra time. It's like they got engaged, and now you've got time before the wedding, you know? So you still, like, nobody gets engaged and gets married the same day or the next day. It doesn't happen. You usually have some time.
Are you saying you use your engagement to decide if you want to marry that person?
I say you have extra time there. Some people, a la Jake Plummer, you know, decide that they, you know, in the end, you know what? I don't want to do this.
Okay.
Yeah. Just so you know.
It's a non-traditional way of going about it.
Gimbo's kind of non-traditional kind of guy when it comes to those things.
You get engaged, and usually people set the wedding date for... Jordan, when did you get engaged?
Like a year and a half before we're actually getting married.
Right. Burnsy?
About a year and a month. Yeah.
I understand.
About a year? You've got that time.
Plan, but right. I don't think that plan is to decide if you want to marry them.
It is time to make your plans, right? To defend Gambo here before he hits eject. I mean, it is you're buying yourself time to make sure that the dresses match and the guest book looks great and the groomsmen are all wearing the right tux and the honeymoon and all that stuff. And so we've got time. We've got time to figure out whether your uncle is going to play the piano at the wedding or not. We got time to figure that stuff out. You know, now they're running out of time.
You can change your mind. Right. You can be like, you know what? That isn't for me.
See, now that's the point that Sarah was
getting at. See, that's what I was getting at.
You don't really, Steve Keim, how much trade interest are you getting for number one?
Yeah, as I said, I'm not going to get into the details, but there's definitely been some attention.
Any of the calls for number one giving you anything to think about?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, I get excited. I mean, I like to do deals, but at the same time, I like good players.
So, look. He didn't reveal anything.
I like
anything.
To do deals.
He obviously didn't give anything away. I'm sure there's a part of him that I don't want to be Steve Keim shrink here. I don't know what's going on inside his head. But
there's Dr. Melfi on me right here.
There's got to be a part of him that's probably a little frustrated with this foregone conclusion that they're taking Kyler Murray, right? I mean,
unless that's what they want.
Unless that's what they want, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been sort of the industry standard for the better part of the last month and a half now, is that they're going to take Kyler Murray.
Listen, you made that bet, you lie in it. The second you said Josh Rosen's our quarterback, for now, you opened up all that speculation. Hiring Cliff Kingsbury, you know what? And then his connection to Kyler Murray. They've got the same agents. You saying he's our quarterback for now. He's our quarterback. Right now, he's our quarterback. Like, all of that just led people to... There's a lot of guesswork that's being done here. Okay? By all these mock drafts and people in the media trying to guess. And that is the path that they have led them down. You have led them to that path with the decision that the organization has made. Whether it was hiring Cliff Kingsbury or... the non-support as much for Rosen at the combine, you've led people down the path of Kyler Murray is going to be the number one pick. Now, maybe that was by plan or maybe it wasn't, but it happened and you just got to deal with it. But he came in and he set the table. He laid down the law. We haven't made up our mind. Don't ask me about it. We haven't made up our mind. There's a lot of process. A lot of guys were considering it number one. There's a lot of guys that could be number one. We haven't made up our mind. And he just got that out of the way right then and there. So that way he wouldn't be bombarded with questions about it.
Do we believe that they haven't made up their mind?
No. I think they have made up their mind. I think it's just now you want to go over it and you want to make sure. You just want to make sure. Like, I believe today, right now, they know what they want to do. They know what they want to do. Now, the only thing that, the only caveat to that is, like, if they want to take Bosa, I believe they want to take Bosa. If they want to take Murray, I believe they want to take Murray. If they want to trade the pick, that's the only thing, you know, it's, they got to make sure that they could get what they want for the pick. I mean, you've got some information on the Raiders maybe not being interested in taking a quarterback at number four.
Yeah.
That could play into a factor. Yeah, maybe they'd like to trade the pick. Maybe that's the top option, but maybe there's not a great offer out there. So that's the only thing that would kind of throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into it. But as far as if you're staying at one and keeping the pick, they know what player they're going
to
take.
I mean, it seems to me it's sort of one of these, we know what we're going to do at number one, unless somebody makes this offer to us or somebody makes that offer to us. I mean, you've got to have a contingency plan. You got to have an or else. You have to have and that's kind of what I've been hinting at the last couple of days, that the Cardinals, I'm sure they know what they want to do. It's just a question of they can execute that plan come draft day. And by that, I mean, we want to trade the number one pick. Will we get everything that we think we can? We want to draft Kyler Murray and trade Josh Rosen. Will we get everything we think we can?
They know
what they want to do. It's just a question of whether between now and next Thursday they're going to be able to execute that vision or not. And that depends on 31 other teams and their level of cooperation with that.
Well, today is Tuesday. I don't think the offers on Tuesday will be what they are on Wednesday of next week. I think that the offers today are going to be lower. So if it is a trade of the number one pick, or if it is a trade of Rosen, that's the one thing I would say that's probably not set in stone what they're going to get.
So while Steve Keim didn't say much about Kyler Murray today, goodness knows others are, and they're starting to cast some doubts around the man himself, around Kyler Murray. We'll explain what some of those doubts are rooted in next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo on your drive home.
We got August, September, October, November, December. 5.5 months, you're gone.
For a second, I didn't know if you knew what month came after December.
Dave Burns, John Gambadoro.
January, Juno, February, Julio, I got April,
August,
I got June.
October day.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show. Steve Keim, Cliff Kingsbury addressing the media today, their final pre-draft press conference, in which there's very little in the way of concrete information, but that does not stop us from taking every soundbite and every comment and trying to, what do they mean? What do you think? It gives us something to talk about, gives us kind of some different perspective on things. One thing that has come up about Kyler Murray, and there was a big, big, big deep dive piece on him on Sports Illustrated's website today. I think it's actually going to be in the magazine. Took me quite a while to get through it today, but it was all about Kyler Murray and what he truly wants to do. Does he want to play football? Does he still harbor thoughts of playing baseball? It was a lot about his father and kind of what he's done behind the scenes to guide/dictate his career.
You see the part? This is hilarious. Pee-wee football, he was the coach. The only people I knew the plays were him and his kid.
He was the offensive coordinator.
And nobody else knew what the plays were.
Not even the head coach. So the dad, this is when he was 11 years old. Dad would call in the play, right? Kyler would explain the play to the other kids on the field. The head coach didn't even know what the play was.
In Pee-wee football?
In Pee-wee football. The head coach didn't know. It was just, and he kept that thing under like lock and key, man. According to this story, he was
offensive coordinator for Pee Wee football.
Yep.
You know what we did in Pee Wee football? We handed the ball off and ran because nobody could throw. And we ran, and then we ran, and then we ran the ball again.
I'm telling you, it was a deep dive. It was a real deep dive into Kyler Murray and what he's all about. So the baseball issues. Are there any concerns about baseball with Kyler? Steve Keim was asked about that today.
I think whoever drafts him is certainly going to have to address that with him.
Did you ask Kyler about baseball when you met him?
When you met with Kyler, I mean, did you ask about the baseball concern? Was that an issue that was brought up?
Maybe.
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 Maybe we did.
Maybe we didn't.
Of course they did.
Well,
I mean, they had to have. Yeah, of course. That's got to come up. Like, you know, listen, he's committed to football right now. What would make him not be committed to football? Not playing well. That he could commit to baseball. Like, he's committed to football as long as he plays well. Right, there's a lot of money to be made in football. Like, a lot of money for him to be made. And we'll talk about the A's portion of it, too, because obviously it's getting out now that the A's offered him a lot more money to try to, I think it was a $14 million.
Well, I was just going to bring that up. They offered him a spot on the 40-man and a $14 million roster bonus in addition to the $5
million
bonus.
So he would have made $19
million. Which is roughly what a top 10 pick in the NFL draft would have been.
But not a top pick overall.
Not a top pick overall,
but a top 10 pick.
Enough to try to make him reconsider what he was going to do. Yeah.
Listen, he wants to play football right now. and he'll play football as long as he's good at it and successful. But if something changes, if he gets into the NFL and he's not successful and he's getting clobbered out there and it's not good, then there's always the possibility he could turn to baseball because he's still young enough to turn back to baseball. I mean, Tim Tebow's not that far away from making it to the majors. He was a football player, tried it. Now look at him. I mean, he's in the minor leagues with the Mets organization. So he's trying to make it to the major leagues. So he could always go back to baseball if it doesn't work. Tebow's playing baseball now because he wasn't good enough at football.
Yeah.
That's why he's not playing baseball because he was a great football player. So if Kyler Murray is a really good football player, you don't have to worry about baseball. And if he's not good, then who cares? He's going to baseball because he's not good enough at football. Then you don't mind losing him.
Yeah, it was fascinating. The whole article was titled, "What Does Kyler Murray Really Want?" And it's all about trying to get to the bottom of making sure, if you're the NFL, that he truly does want you. And I think the very little we could glean from what Steve said about that today is that any team that's talking to Kyler Murray needs to have those conversations with him to make sure. Then there's other issues about Kyler Murray that the article brings up.
Okay,
I'm going to read a couple of quotes here, and then I want to get your reaction to it. One AFC exec said about the Murrays, plural, son and father, quote, "You look at people's history and their past is a good indication of their future, and there's just a lot of changing minds with these guys. It's easy to be committed when you're the Heisman Trophy winner and your team's in a national playoff. But what about when you're playing for the Cardinals and getting beat to hell all week?" Close quote. Here's another one, and this is from Scott McLaughlin, former NFL GM. "Watching Kyler in an interview, it's like, come on, guy, what do you got? Give me something. He's just not a go-getter. Doesn't mean he can't be a good QB, just mean he's not going to be the guy in the locker room." He goes on to say, "I get face-to-face so I could say, listen, if I'm investing a first-round pick on you, you need to look me in the eye and tell me you're football through and through no matter what. I got to know that. You can go play baseball, that's your choice, but if what you choose affects my career, my coaches' careers, and their families, I got to understand that you have the passion. The players need to know it. They can read your bull bleep real quick. Coaches, too, he's got to prove this is what he wants to be," close quote.
Was Russell Wilson loved by the teammates in his locker room? Or was there a divide?
There was a divide.
There was a divide in the locker room. They called him a name. I don't remember what it was. But those guys they didn't like him. They didn't like him. They didn't like Russell Wilson. So I'm trying to remember what it was that they called him. But
I can't remember either off the top of my head.
Yeah. Jordan, do you remember what it was? You don't remember either? Yeah, they called him something.
See, he gave himself the nickname of Mr. Unlimited? Is that what you're referring to?
No, his teammates.
Which is a little weird.
His teammates had called him. So I'll try to find.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
All right, but he was. There were teammates that called him a name. Like that he was more of a loner and he was by himself and he didn't. I mean, it didn't matter. He's Kyler Murray has no leadership qualms. None. The Arizona Cardinals have no concerns about his leadership. Zero. And that is not to be questioned. Like everyone, I think it's unanimous, believes that he is a leader, that he is a guy that could lead this franchise. There are no concerns at all with his ability to be a leader. If they take Kyler Murray, I'm going to tell you there are no concerns with his ability to lead the football team, to be the guy. Maybe he had a bad interview.
Maybe.
With Dan Patrick because he was a little, uncomfortable with what he was going to say. But you brought up a really great point. The people that prepared him for that interview, they didn't last very long, did they?
No, they didn't. Here's the Dan Patrick. If we remember, this was before he had made his decision. Here's his awkward exchange with Dan Patrick on February 1st about what sport he was
going to
choose.
"Are you going to spring training?"
"Oh, no."
"Wait, you don't know? Dad, is he going to spring training?"
Another no comment here. You know these microphones are on right now. Like
I know.
Now, okay, so that awkward exchange, and then according to the article today on Sports Illustrated, there was another bad exchange that he had in a Q&A with some military families in Atlanta, and somebody there asked him basically the same question, and he basically gave the same response, kind of the I'm not sure, not going to answer this. According to the article, as soon as that exchange was done, Dad takes the PR guy who's been consulting with Murray on how he's supposed to answer these questions.
And fired
basically him. Fired him on the spot.
Right.
Chewed him out, and they ultimately fired the PR guy when it was all said and done because he of his failure to coach up his kid with the right way to how that answer that question.
Right. And those interviews don't mean that the kid can't be a leader. When he's out there and he's comfortable, that's not his environment, okay? Meeting with the media is not his environment is in the locker room, on the football field. I mean, man, he led Oklahoma into the playoffs. Come on. This leadership thing is ridiculous. I'm telling you right now, there are absolutely zero concerns that the Cardinals have with his leadership. Zero. And I've heard no other teams have concerns. People are guessing at this over an interview that he did when he wasn't really sure how to answer the questions. And, you know, the PR firm got fired over it. But that is no indication that of his ability to lead.
Okay,
none.
So let's set that one off to the side for a second.
Okay.
I would assume then that the bigger concern is, in fact, the baseball thing. And trying to find out if he's really in it. If he's really all in on the football thing. Now, if you could take
The A's offered him $14 million plus $19
million? $19 million total.
Did he jump at it?
No.
No, I mean, so he didn't take it.
Well, but if things start to go rough, I mean, you heard Steve Keim himself. He's like, yeah, mm-hmm. That's something you got to ask him about, something you got to find out about. And I kind of thought it was a no-brainer too. Then I read this article, and it seems like there are people around the league who still don't trust it. Who still don't,
because if
they just don't trust it yet.
If he's Brock Osweiler, I mean, name a quarterback that was drafted in the first round and now is like a backup. You know, if things aren't going well for him.
Blaine Gabbert.
Blaine Gabbert. If things aren't going well, is he going to stick it out? And no, he's going to go to baseball probably because there's time. But at that point, like, if he's not getting the job done and he's not good, is anybody going to be upset that he went to baseball? Like, are you going to be upset that he didn't?
Well, by then, if it's not working out well enough for him and he chooses baseball over football, it probably means you're ready to move on as an organization as
right.
well, I would think. For the first time this season, D-backs beginning an East Coast 10-game trip. What's going to make that trip successful? We'll ask their manager, Troy Lovello. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Troy Lovello scheduled to join us in just a moment or two here on the Burns and Gambo Show, but we have time to get in the Twitter Poll question of the day, and for that we have Sarah Cazell standing by.
Indeed. Hello. Okay. So, we heard that the Warriors made some history last night, right? But
wrong.
Not like the right kind of history.
The wrong side of history last night.
Yeah, yeah. So, that 31-point collapse by the Warriors, seeing that happen and knowing that DeMarcus Cousins, he is now out indefinitely with a quad injury.
That could be done.
Yeah. Are you still confident that the Warriors will win the NBA title?
Ooh.
Yes.
I'll go with your skeptical.
Okay. 58% say yes, they are still confident they'll win. 24% say that they are now skeptical, and 18% say, hey, they weren't my pick to start with.
You know, that's interesting. The thing about it, it would appear they get kind of bored easily, right? They're up 31, 7.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Yeah, we're good. We're fine. We're done.
Right.
We're bored with this. As soon as they're in a game where, and I know it sounds like I'm making excuses for them, but I do think that when you're a team that's had that much success as they've had for a sustained period of time, you know, like the regular season, there are probably times during the regular season they get bored. They're up 31, up 1-0 against the LA Clippers in the first round of the playoffs. You're probably a little bored with that. I got this. We're fine. And it burned them. It burned them. Burned them right in the butt last night. They'll be fine. They'll be fine.
I'll go with a little skeptical, okay? A little bit.
Then who do you think will challenge them?
I actually think there's more than one. I mean, I think whoever comes out of the Portland-Oklahoma City series is a threat. And, of course, the Rockets are a threat.
Yeah.
I think the Rockets are a threat.
Yeah, mostly the Rockets. But Oklahoma City would be a real interesting matchup. real interesting matchup. So, all right, that's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo on social media is where you can find that. D-backs in Atlanta tonight taking on the Braves this afternoon, actually. Starts at 4 o'clock. We'll have the coverage for you on ESPN 620. But as always, I promise you, we'll keep you completely updated here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We'll let you know exactly what's going on with that game. Robbie Ray gets the start tonight. Can Robbie Ray go longer than five innings in a baseball game in 2019?
Man, you got to question it.
Would seem to be one of the questions at this point, right?
There will be games where he goes longer than five innings. There'll be a game where he goes six, where he goes seven. But you know, I mean, this guy's got amazing stuff, and he's up around that 100 pitch mark by the fifth inning, and it's one of the things that's going to come back to bite him in the ass a lot of times, because you got to turn it over to your bullpen, and you're pitching well, you got a 2-1 lead, a 3-2 lead, now you got to trust your bullpen to go get you the win, and a lot of times that doesn't happen because bullpens this year's bullpens have been terrible, historically terrible, how bad the bullpens throughout baseball have been. The amount of innings that they're throwing, guys just aren't going very deep into the game. But yeah, I mean, Robbie Ray's, we've all been, counting on him to have a great season. And to me, it's not just being able to pitch five innings. It's you've got to go deeper. You've got to rest your bullpen. You've got to be a guy that you got to be a bulldog. You got to go six, seven innings, eight innings. You got maybe strike out less guys and get the ball put in play more just to be able to get out of an inning to get a batter out with one or two pitches instead of five or six pitches.
Yeah. Don't look now. Dansby Swanson.
Killing it.
He is killing it.
He is. He's
four homers, 18 RBIs. He's got a 995 OPS so far this year.
Yeah. And they're raving about him like he's more than just a defensive marvel over there at the shortstop position. His first couple of years, he was just really good defensive player. But I believe he leads that team in RBIs, leads the teams in runs batted in.
He does. Yeah.
So he's done a really good job offensively. He's swinging the bat well. And there was even a story in the LA, in the Atlanta paper about, okay, so this is the Dansby Swanson that we were expecting here. Because now they're getting to see what he could do both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, something else we're going to talk about in a little bit, too, is if you look at this, the start to the season, and granted, it's very, very early, but look at the National League West. I mean, the Colorado Rockies haven't been very good at all. Obviously, they're 5-12 on the season.
I think they've lost like eight in a row. They're not playing good baseball. And that would, we didn't make picks this year, but that would have been my pick to win the NL West. I probably would have went with
Colorado. Would have been the Rockies? Would have been the
team? I think I would have.
Over the Dodgers?
I think, with the addition of Daniel Murphy, who's out with an injury. Yeah, I think I would. And Kershaw was hurt going into the season. He pitched, last night or the night before. So he's back now. But I would have probably picked the Rockies.
Yeah, the broader point being, despite how bad the Rockies have been, everybody is so far relatively bunched together in this division. It's early. It's way, way early. They haven't even played but a tenth of the season. Padres are first with an 11-7 record. The San Francisco Giants are in fourth with a 7-10 record. It's been pretty wide open so far.
It's wide open. You just want to hang in that race. You want to hang around 500 for as long as you can. You're not going to need 95 wins to win this division. Most likely, you're not going to need 95 wins. So you just want to hang around as long as you can. I think a 500 team in the NL West can be in contention through August. I do. I think if you're a 500 team, you'll be in contention through the month of August.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs. Diamondbacks. 98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Tori Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by the Negrete Law Firm. For an experienced personal injury attorney, contact us at azhometownlawfirm.com.
Time for our weekly visit with the manager of the Diamondbacks, Tori Lovello. He joins us in Atlanta, where this afternoon the Diamondbacks are taking on the Atlanta Braves, the first of a 10-game road trip. Good afternoon, Tori. How are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Watching your team from afar now, and this kind of in the early part of the season, the first opportunity to really take this team out on the road and kind of see what they have away from home.
Yeah, you always circle a few thoughts or a few road trips for the year, and this was one that I had seen and it stuck out to me. It was going to be a three-city tour against two playoff teams, tough venues to play in. The third had a tremendous year and finished pretty strong last year. So I knew that this was going to be a little bit of a challenge, but I like challenges. I think you measure where you stand with those challenges. You get to see what the competition looks like, and there's no better way to see how you see where you're at than going up against this type of competition and use it as a measuring stick. I think our guys are going to be ready. I think we're pretty excited after a day off yesterday to come in here and play some good baseball.
How important was it to salvage that final game against the Padres and not have a four-game sweep at home? Good performance out of Zach Greinke, and the bats woke up a little bit. So how important was that game for your squad?
Yeah, I think it was huge. I categorize it as a must-win after the game. I don't know. Game sevens are must-wins. Obviously, we know that. But I was just trying to state how I was feeling, how the rest of the guys were feeling, because we were frustrated for us to win that game and get led by Zach Greinke the way he did. It was a really, really good day for us to win. We got on the plane and had a nice trip across the country to Atlanta, and now we're ready to play here. But, you know, you don't want to lose four games at home to the same team, let alone somebody within your division. That's humble pie. And I feel like the three one-run losses that we had were tough. But we had some identifiable things inside of those games where we could improve upon and hopefully turn around and win some one-run games. It'd be nice to go and win run-run games on the road. I think that's a sign of a really, really good team.
Answer this as best you can, because the Padres are now relevant. They've spent a lot of money the last 2 years on Machado and Hosmer, and they've got a really deep farm system. Kids, you've seen all these rookie pitchers coming up. You had the incident with Machado. He threw the bat right behind John Ryan Murphy in foul territory. He could have stepped on the bat and got hurt. You had Peralta. Mm-hmm. You got Escobar, got hit on Saturday. They were both hit by pitches. Escobar was visibly and clearly upset that he got hit with that pitch. And obviously, the retaliation with Holland on Sunday. Is there bad blood right now between the Diamondbacks and the Padres?
No, I don't think so. None whatsoever. We know that they're a good team. I know they feel the same way about us, and that's just the spirit of competition. You know, it's where guys get out there and they want to do their best, and things don't work out. They get a little bit frustrated, and sometimes that frustration shows. And, you know, I don't think the Padre players were throwing at our guys by no means in a one-run game. Would they be reacting that way and doing that? But you could see visibly the frustration that our players had, and that's just the nature of the beast, and that's just sometimes where it takes you. But the Padres are a good baseball team. We knew that going in. The day they signed Manny Machado, the day they signed Eric Hosmer, they got better. And we know that it's going to be a very, very tough Western Division. We're not saying that there's going to be a runaway team. We feel like it's going to be an even horse race for a little while. And we like the position we're in. We like how we're playing. And we like the chance that we can go out and do special things this year.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Level of concern that you have at this point in the season with Robbie Ray's ability to go deep into a baseball game?
Well, it's probably minimal, and I'll just compare it to last year. I know he spoiled us with a tremendous 17, and that was kind of a breakout campaign for him. So I think the next year you assume that it's going to be easy and you can go out there and just throw bullets no matter where they land. It's going to work for you. But last year didn't work so well for him. But I could tell by the preparation he had this offseason, by the quality of his fastball, that he was ready to go in spring training. We've seen that translate. I just think he gets a little worn down because he's working very hard to get through certain innings. And when he gets worn down, the stuff backs up on him. So we got to pay close attention to that. We know at some point that, you know, 85 pitches will turn into 95 quality pitches, which will turn into 105 quality pitches. I don't really necessarily like to go much beyond that. But we want to build him up to being extremely strong from the first pitch until the last pitch. And what I tell our starting pitchers is to go as hard as you can for as long as you can. Don't preserve anything. Don't worry about who's coming in behind you. Just do what you can do the best way you know how for as long as you possibly can, and your teammates will be there to pick up the slack.
I know you're a stickler for good, fundamental, sound baseball. You instill that in your players. You want to play, you know, just good baseball, and you feel like if you play like that, you're not going to get beat very much. That seventh inning on Saturday, I mean, that was just a crazy inning. I mean, it ended with a 1-2-3 double play, and that was tough because you had so many opportunities. But with Dyson getting, you know, picked off, caught stealing after he had walked and then Peralta had walked, how much did that hurt the inning?
Yeah, I think it killed the whole mojo of the inning. There's no doubt. I think when Jenter got that first down, took a deep sigh and said, wow, I got lucky with that big out right there. So, it hurt. It definitely hurt. And you're right, Gamble. I pride this organization on being fundamentally sound, having a high baseball IQ, and knowing
what to do, when to do it at the right time. And that wasn't the only thing. We didn't execute probably seven times over the course of those three losses that ended up costing us some runs or cost us a chance to have big innings. We will shore that up. It's addressed. These players understand where I'm coming from. And we keep moving forward each and every day. We can't keep going on that. We can just keep improving and making sure we don't make that same mistake moving forward.
Tell me about Troy Lovello joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show live from Atlanta. The Taiwan Walker starting to ramp it up a little bit. What level of cautiousness will you apply with him coming back from the Tommy John? And has anything happened over these first few weeks of the season to alter a possible timeline for his return?
I don't think so. I think that we're going to be extremely cautious because he's such a big horse in our race. You know, he's counted on in such an incredible level, and we love every part of Taiwan. And I know last year we were trying to do that with Shelby. Unfortunately, we got clipped with some key injuries to starting pitching, and we had to ramp him up and speed him up. And I feel like Shelby last year was playing a little bit of catch up, and we weren't doing the most fair thing to him by asking him to speed up. And I think he'd been built up to 85 pitches. We were asking his next outing to go up to 95 at the big league level. That's hard to do. So we've learned from those experiences, and when we can, we're going to slow things down or keep them at the normal pace and listen to Taiwan. And what I've learned especially is when a starting pitcher who's coming back from an injury tells you he feels good, it doesn't mean speed him up. It means keep it right where it's at and keep him on that path. We want those types of comments. So we love that he's feeling good. We won't ramp him up. I don't think there will be a need to do that. We have really good young pitchers and starting pitchers in the minor leagues if we need somebody this year. Last year, that wasn't the case.
How difficult is it to navigate a bullpen in today's day and age? Major League Baseball right now on pace for what would be a record 5,000 relief appearances. More than a third of the save opportunities have been blown. 4.42 ERA, highest in the last decade. I mean, how difficult is it? I mean, you've got Andrey struggling, you've got Hirano struggling, and you've got to go to your bullpen for almost four innings every single day. How difficult is this?
Well, listen, I hope that trend continues for the Braves bullpen for the next couple of days. But it is a challenge. It's probably one of the hardest things to do as far as managing a baseball game. And you talk to some managers, they say it is the hardest thing to do during a baseball game, especially when you have a pitcher that's hitting. It also compounds when and how you maneuver your pitchers in and out of the games. And I know you guys follow, sometimes you get trapped in that situation by asking a guy to go back out there so you don't burn pitchers. So it's tough. It's very, very tough. You can't run from your pieces. You've got to empower them. You got to show that you believe in them. At times you have to pull them back and have conversations or maybe have them step out a turn or two. But for the most part, we got a seven-man bullpen that is going to be counted on a really, really important level, and they know it. And I like that. I want them to embrace that and say, you know what, I'm going to be the guy that Torrey comes to on this day. I like to establish those roles. I want to make sure that the guys know what their roles are without changing. Very often, every once in a while, I'll talk to them about maybe a change in the plan for that day. But for the most part, we need those guys, and they know it. But it is a tremendous challenge day by day based on availability, based on performance. It can be a challenge, but by and large, you got to count on them. You got to show that you believe in them, and they're going to give you good results.
Torrey, we appreciate you joining us so short before first pitch today. We appreciate the time. We will talk to you next week. Good luck on the road trip.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Torrey Lovello joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, the Seahawks locked up Russell Wilson to a new record deal, but in the process, have they handcuffed themselves with the rest of their roster? We'll talk about that coming up on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.
Dave Burns.
My jaw hurts from laughing. That's funny.
John Gambadoro.
What the hell are you laughing at?
Burns and Gambo.
It's funny.
Afternoons 2 to 6. 98.7 FM Arizona's Sports Station.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, you can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
God, he reminds me of a singer.
What, with his voice?
Yeah. Like, who am I thinking
Seattle.
Of?
Hey, Seattle.
We got a deal.
Are you thinking about Barry White?
Barry White.
Barry White.
Barry White.
Barry White.
Yeah.
Hey, baby. Oh, my God. That's Barry White.
Oh, baby.
That is I mean, that's who it was. It's Barry White.
Sitting here on the radio talking with Gambo, going as low as I can go. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go nice and low when talking to Gambo with Barry White here on the Burns and Gambo show.
The last, my everything. Great song. Can't get enough of your love.
You know what, Bickley and Murata, they compare Cliff Kingsbury.
He's got a very deep voice too. Yeah, they think
never gonna give you up. Mm. I mean, that's Barry White right there. Tell me this isn't him.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. I'm gonna see y'all in the morning.
Nice.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, you can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
Barry White.
See y'all in the morning.
Yeah,
well, Russell Wilson.
I love You're the First, the Last, My Everything. I think I got that on my Spotify. Yeah, so what is it? Barry White.
Russell Wilson.
I would be going to bed if I just signed that contract. The hell you doing going to bed?
No, it's party time. No, it's
$140 million in new money, man. You going to bed?
About 30 minutes before the deadline, Russell Wilson's agent reached an agreement with the Seattle Seahawks that not only gave him $140 million, it was a $65 million signing bonus. Not guaranteed money, signing bonus, $65 million. Put your name
on
the dotted
line. These players have the teams over a barrel.
Yes, they do.
You want me? What do you want? What do you want? The guy you had before me, what was it, Matt Flynn?
Yeah.
Go look at the Seattle quarterbacks before me. You want any of those guys? Because you could have them. Like, it's when you get a good quarterback, you're stuck. You got to pay them what they want. Like, you don't have any leverage. What leverage do you have as a team? Oh, I could franchise tag you for 2 years. Great. You're going to pay up the you-know-what. I mean,
sure.
You got to pay. Either way, you got to pay.
The one thing that was very clear from those who covered this deal was that the Seahawks paid through the nose, but what they didn't do was they didn't sacrifice the structure of the contract the way they wanted.
Right.
They didn't give him a percentage of the salary cap. They didn't, you know, there were reports that Russell Wilson was looking to do something extraordinary and unusual and revolutionary, for lack of a better way of putting it, and it wasn't any of those. It was a 4-year deal, $140 million, 107 guaranteed, $65 million signing bonus, and bang, he is now the highest paid player in the NFL, but his salary is not tied to some percentage of the salary cap. And Steve Keim said it today during the pre-draft press conference for the Cardinals. Cost certainty at quarterback is a big deal.
It's huge. I mean, when you have cost certainty like that, there's no doubt that it gives you unlimited resources to play with around the quarterback position, which, as we all know, is sort of the driver in all of this. But those contracts can really limit you, what you do. I mean, you're seeing that when teams pay a quarterback big dollars, there's a revolving door at different positions. You know, when we paid Carson a good number for a number of years, I mean, there were restrictions that we had from a cap standpoint, but also when you have a good one, you don't want to let him go. So again, that's that double-edged sword. But I'm happy for Russell. He certainly deserves it, and he can take care of some of my alumni donations.
I wish it was me paying him right now because I should have taken him. It's haunted me to this day. Highest average annual value by a quarterback. Russell Wilson, number one at $35 million, followed by Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr.
Yeah.
So those are your highest annual value. The interesting part about all those guys, I mean, Russell Wilson's won one Super Bowl, so has Aaron Rodgers. Matt Ryan hasn't won a Super Bowl. Cousins, Garoppolo, Stafford, Carr, another. So that's your top seven.
Everybody is looking for a trade to get him out of Arizona, but today the Cardinals brass was raving about Josh Rosen. We'll let you hear some of it next on the Burns and Gambo show.